Welcome back. It's Mike McIntyre here with you on the 4:30 to 5 o'clock part of the show. I am so glad that you could join us today. 952-946-6205 is the number we're taking your phone calls at. You may want to join in this next conversation that we're going to have, because we're going to talk about something that every one of us has to deal with every day, because you know what? The internet has become the utility, just like electricity, just like water, just like, you know, sewer. Well, some people would say the internet is a sewer. Depends on what the content is. But you use it every day. You rely on it. You expect it to be there. And you probably have to buy it from one provider. You might have two in town, but boy, it costs a lot. It's frustrating. It's not as fast as you want. And that's a problem, because there's not a lot of competition. Now, cities have been talking about getting into this business, and some cities have, where they start providing their own internet. And in some cases, we just did a story earlier this week, I believe, in Minnesota, where in Minnesota, some of the farm communities have been banding together, not because, you know, there's bad internet, but because there's no internet, and they've been building their own, you know, internet companies out there. And it's, you know, it's working. It's faster than what you have, probably, unless you've got some super fast connection. So there are other ways other than Comcast. Although Comcast and some of the telephone companies probably don't want you to think about that, probably don't want the competition. And that has been a problem, because certain groups have been lobbying to stop this in other states. And in fact, they have. They have managed to get laws passed that say, you know what, cities, you cannot get into the business of internet, because Comcast is going to make that money, not you. Yeah, that's what's happened. It has not happened here in Minnesota, but it is potential. It is a problem across the country. And we've invited the director of the Community Broadband Networks Initiative at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, who needs to get a shorter title, I think, for everything, Christopher Mitchell, to join us. Christopher, welcome to the program.
Thank you. The title's been a problem for a lot of years.
How do you fit that on a business card?
Multiple lines.
Let's talk about the issue here, which is I get frustrated because I have Comcast. I have a phone company I can buy stuff from, and I would like my city of Eagan to get into the business of doing their own internet. And in fact, they have for some businesses in Eagan, but
yes,
it's really high speed, but it's only in certain areas. And, you know, it's because, you know, it costs money to build out infrastructure, but that's what the government does. It builds out infrastructure. So, I mean, a very general question, why isn't the government building out infrastructure and doing this when they should be the utility doing this?
Well, I think a lot of local governments are trying to figure out the right role. And, you know, you were going through a couple of different things, even in your introduction. Some cities are basically becoming like Comcast. I like to think that they are Comcast, but with good service, low prices, and all the other things that we don't get from Comcast. But they offer the same services, effectively, in terms of internet, television, telephone. Other local governments, they're thinking, you know what, we want to put in some lines to our businesses like Eagan has done. And other governments are thinking, we're going to put in some infrastructure and we're just going to lease it out to other providers to use. Usually local providers that have good customer service, not the big companies like Comcast and CenturyLink. So there's a variety of approaches, but the number one reason that I'd say most local governments don't do it is because they're scared. They're a little bit afraid of what might happen in terms of if Comcast or CenturyLink were to sue them, challenge them in some way. And they're also afraid that they might not do a good job at it. And I think that's reasonable. This is a challenge, and I don't want to minimize it. So there is some honest apprehension in terms of it's a difficult job to do. But I think local governments are stepping up more, and I think people need to demand that their local governments at least examine the possibilities.
I mean, is it working in places? I mean, you said local governments are hesitant to jump into it, and so I'm sure one of the things that makes them hesitant is they don't see examples or lots of examples of local governments that have gotten into this and made it work. Have there been examples where it worked or examples where it's gone horribly wrong?
Both. More examples where it works, though, fortunately. We're tracking over 450 communities where local governments have done something in terms of wired, usually fiber optic internet access. About 150 of those are citywide. Most of those are successes. Cedar Falls, Iowa, has, I think it's 9 out of 10 people in Cedar Falls choose not to connect from CenturyLink, not from Mediacom, but they want to get services from the municipal utility the city has. And they were the first city in Wisconsin to have a gigabit available to any address. They've been doing it for 20 years. They have an incredible record of success. You know, Chattanooga is the poster boy for success. $23 million extra last year, I think, when you subtract the costs and debt from the revenues. So there are, you know, some of them, these networks have incredible successes. The most common example, though, is actually one where the network just pays its bills year to year, doesn't really have any profits. They offer some competition, so prices are lower to people in the community. And more importantly, for some, jobs are able to stick around because they can get those connections that they need. And then we have a few examples of communities where it didn't work out the way they expected. There are some, you know, you might say failures, and there's some that are hard to categorize, right? So Monticello, Minnesota, 45 minutes out, 94 from Minneapolis, they built a network, and they went from having some of the worst connectivity in the state. I mean, they had basic broadband just barely, but they had something, but it wasn't good. And now they have some of the best. They can get better access than I can in St. Paul, you could in Eagan. They pay a lot less than we do, but the network hasn't broken even financially. So they've had to subsidize it with funds from the liquor store. That's not ideal. It's not what they wanted. They had to give their bondholders a haircut, which is unfortunate for the bondholders, certainly, although those bondholders took that risk knowing it, offered a higher interest rate for my friends out there who are really kind of geeky about this. So it's not, you know, it's not too unexpected when you have a higher risk bond that you face some challenges. But that's, I would say that's the sort of the spectrum right there. You have cities that a few haven't done the best job. They're trying to figure out how to make it turn it around. You know, our electric utilities are 120 years old. The network in Monticello is 6 or 7 years old. In another 15 or 20 years, I think people might never even know that Monticello had trouble. But it's a warning sign. And any local government that thinks about doing this, lobbyists from the cable and telephone companies, they're saying, oh, no, you don't want to be another Monticello. You look at the paper in the Rochester Post Bulletin, an op-ed was just published by the telephone company's lobbying group saying, oh, no, if Rochester was to do anything on municipal broadband, it would be a disaster. The city would be, you know, locusts and plagues would come to it. So that's what happens.
But I look at what I get from, I mean, okay, so let's say I'm let's stick with the businesses because they've been around, they're working right now. I can hear that argument, but I look at it also and I say, I'm paying a lot of money. B, the service I know is slower here than just some of the places you just mentioned. And practically any civilized nation in the world now has faster internet than I do in Eagan, Minnesota, because, you know, that's the way it's been built out. It's been developed. They've invested in infrastructure. It's looked at as a utility. So in terms of speed, in terms of price, it gets beaten. And I know whatever it is I'd have to deal with is probably better than what I deal with Comcast, because it is rated the lowest of any company in terms of customer service. So why, you know, I think you've answered this, but why did we end up with, you know, companies like this running this instead of the government getting into it?
Well, it's a really good question. And I actually think that there's kind of a happy medium in that the government decided more than 20 years ago, 25 years ago, maybe, that it wanted to commercialize the internet. They wanted private entities to help build it out. And I think that was the right decision. Now, I think government can actually build it out at the same time, and kind of in the same way that we can have private taxis and public buses on our roads, right? It's not an either or proposition. The problem is that you have a service here, and it's what we call a natural monopoly, or it has characteristics of a natural monopoly, which is to say, if you and I wanted to build a network, we wanted to compete with Comcast and Eagan, we'd have to raise more than $10 million, certainly. I don't know exactly what the number might be, but let's say it might be $20 or $30 million.
All right.
Now, who's going to lend that money to us, right?
Not me.
Certainly
I don't
not
have
a bank, which is thinking, well, Comcast is just going to beat you guys up. Comcast can lower their prices. Even though the service won't be as good, people are going to go with the lower price. And a company like Comcast that's been around forever, it's so big, they can just take losses year after year. And that's actually what we saw in Monticello, where Charter lowered their price so much. They were willing to lose money year after year on every customer that took their deals just to try and hurt the municipal network and drive it out of business. So that's how we ended up here. And the challenge is, I think, where do we go next? And Egan is smart. Egan is building some fiber. I think people like you would like it to be more aggressive. Mm-hmm. And if enough people tell their city council, maybe it will be more aggressive.
I'm going to see my mayor tonight. I'll call him up.
You know, in St. Paul, they're doing nothing. And it's just driving us nuts. I mean, they're just throwing money at Comcast to connect the schools, the libraries, all that. Not the schools, but the libraries, the police stations, the municipal facilities. We're just paying Comcast all kinds of money for this cruddy connection when we should be investing in fiber, not aggressively, but certainly just, you know, putting a little bit of fiber in the ground when we can at the bare minimum and trying to figure out how to build this over time.
Let's talk about the thing that kind of prompted this whole conversation that we're going to have today, which is what the court ruled on the FCC's attempt here to say that cities can go ahead and do this despite what state rules say, what state laws say. And a lot of those laws, you know, that have been passed in North Carolina and Tennessee have come from ALEC, I believe, saying,
right.
And basically this is large business funding government to say, don't pass laws that are going to, you know, cause us to lose money. How did that all happen? And what does that FC? What does this ruling mean for the for states that want to have their own local control over internet?
I don't think this has a big impact outside of North Carolina and Tennessee to start off with. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically what happened was you have North Carolina and Tennessee years ago passing these laws at the behest of the telephone and cable companies that wrote them. At that time, the newspapers didn't really run stories about it. The radio talk shows didn't talk about it. And so they kind of went through in secret, more or less. And that was how they got through. Since then, we haven't really seen new laws like that getting through because it's enough of a big deal now that light is shined on it. And then the elected officials who have been taking all this money from the cable and telephone companies and passing these laws, most of them get embarrassed. Some of them get indignant. And so, you know, we're not as worried about it continuing, but those laws are still there. Trying to reverse them is incredibly difficult because, I mean, Tennessee, we tried to reverse this. I mean, I was just a small part in terms of observing it, but a group of people has been fighting for years, grassroots organizing, and they lost a committee vote 5-3. And I believe the newspaper said there was 26 lobbyists in the room from Comcast and AT&T for a 5-3 committee vote. You know, they can marshal those kinds of resources to just get out there and protect these terrible laws. So the FCC said, well, this is ridiculous. And actually, these laws are regulating interstate commerce. They're not really regulating what cities can do. This is the way they're written is just about protecting these industries. So our mission is to expand internet access. We're going to get rid of those laws because they're inappropriate restrictions on interstate commerce, the ability to invest in these networks. And the court basically said, nope, sorry, FCC. And if you read between the lines of the opinion, the court is really saying these are dumb laws. But the states
laws.
Have the right to make dumb laws, and so the FCC cannot overrule them. So other states will have to, you know, will continue working with the legislature to get them to understand that these barriers are bad, and the 20-some states that have them like to roll them back. The one thing I'd like to note is Minnesota actually does have one of these. It wasn't an ALEC rule, but it was passed in like 1915, and it has to do with a telephone switch. And the way it's written, it's kind of opaque, but it's convinced a lot of cities that they cannot do this without passing a 2/3 or 65% referendum. Hmm. And so that has stopped communities, especially in more rural areas where you need the telephone service. You know, in the Twin Cities, if you were to build a fiber and cable service, you could probably make that work in the right conditions. But out if you're in greater Minnesota, it's hard to figure out how to make a service that doesn't have telephone built into it. And so that referendum's hard because the cable and telephone lobbyists, they just have to spend, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars to convince 36% of the people to vote against it. And that's a really big hurdle.
That is a big hurdle. Are there any other attempts in Minnesota to pass dumb laws that, or is the telephone law enough to, that the whole telco cartel is happy with what we have?
Well, every time there's an effort, Minnesota League of Cities, a number of elected officials push back and try to get that law changed so that there would be no supermajority referendum requirement. That's when it comes in. And the cable and telephone companies, the big ones in particular, they really work hard to make sure that it doesn't. So what would happen is that we would say, let's get rid of that provision. And the cable and telephone lobbyists would counter with, okay, if you're giving them something, we got to get something. So we want to have a referendum requirement that's 50%, but we also want to have these other three kickers in there that are going to make it really hard to build networks. And from our point of view, we'd rather have bad legislation, bad laws that we're used to, rather than new things that they might come up with.
The other thing is that
when you look at the money that was set aside to expand rural internet access, the $30-35 million that was set aside this year. But Comcast was the number one lobbyist on that issue, despite the fact that they can get zero of the grants because they've really only operated in the Twin Cities. Anything that is telecom, related, broadband, telephone related, Comcast is meeting with the governor's staff, the legislators. They have these people that just live at the Capitol. And the consumer groups like me, we can do a little tiny bit of lobbying. We don't have the time or capacity. And, you know, it's almost a question of whether it's even worth it because there's just so much to overcome from that power of such a big company like Comcast that's only gotten bigger over the years.
We're talking with Christopher Mitchell, who's the director of the Community Broadband Networks Initiative at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. I got one more question here before we run, and that is, if we have our own locally government-built internet, does that get rid of the threat of net neutrality? Not the threat of net neutrality, but kind of ensure net neutrality, because it's the large companies like Comcast that we're worried about that are going to slow down traffic or speed up their own traffic at the expense of other people.
You know, I try to be very careful with my words, so I wouldn't say it would ensure that we wouldn't have it, but we'd be in a better world if we had that there. And that's because the threat of competition would make it less likely that Comcast would do that. I think local governments are almost never going to throttle traffic in that way. One, they typically don't want to. And two, if you don't have the scale of Comcast, advertisers and other ones don't want to cut deals with you. They don't want to cut deals with 20,000 local governments around the country. So we have some natural protections if we have local publicly owned networks. And the final check on that, of course, is that if a local government builds a network and then it starts to operate poorly, you can toss people out. And people have lost their jobs around the country when people are unhappy with the municipal network decisions that were made. So it's something that when you have it locally owned by the public, by the local government, you can influence that at the ballot box or, through just talking a lot of times with mayor or elected officials, depending on the size of the community.
Christopher Mitchell, it has been wonderful talking with you. It's a great, fascinating topic. Thank you so much for enlightening us today. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to take a break and then we'll take more of your phone calls. 952-946-6205. It's Mike McEntee in here on AM 950.